Good enough. Exact dates don't matter that much. Now, you described your first day then, and how did you feel at the end of the first day and going home? Do you remember?
I was so tired. And then at that time, I was right in the streetcar. And I didn't get a seat. I had to stand all the way from Los Angeles clear up to Pasadena. So I was pretty tired. But then I started getting used to it, you know. And like I say, after a year, I knew my way around very well, so I didn't.
But because there were a couple things going on there. You'd never worked, you'd never been around strangers, you'd never taken the streetcar on your own before.
Right.
I mean, that very first day you did all of these
all of those things by
things.
myself, yeah.
What happened when you came home? Did anyone want to know how your day was? Or?
Yeah, well, the kids were young, you know, little, and they just said, oh, my mom's here and doing that. But my husband didn't have very much to say because he didn't approve in the beginning and he didn't have much to say about it, so.
Did his attitude change at all as the time went on?
Well, as the time went on, it changed a little, but I don't think he ever really, really got used to the idea of me working.
And would you talk about your work with him, or about
yeah.
the so he would express some interest?
Yeah, but he was a very reserved man. He didn't have too much to say, you know, and he wasn't the type of guy that you'd sit down and you'd chat around, you know. Like me, I'm a chatterbox, and he wasn't. He was, you know, you'd have to pull the words out of him, you know. So,
because you said up until that point, too, you'd never worn slacks, you'd never worn anything but high heels.
Yeah.
How did your family react to seeing you coming, well, leaving and coming home
yeah.
with slacks and low heels? And
yeah, well, they didn't say much. Like I say, they were so young that they didn't think much.
And how about him?
He didn't
what,
say
you
anything.
Didn't say anything?
No. He knew that I had to wear that, so he didn't say too much.
Now, you started on the elevators, you
mm-hmm.
said, and you were from the very first day, were you actually riveting and bucking?
Yeah, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit, because at the very first time that they put me to work, they putting little plate nuts and little plates, you know, little, tiny little things.
Mm-hmm. And that's putting the plates on?
On the elevator in the back. You see, because the elevator was up here. It was being formed
mm-hmm.
right here. So I put a few little parts that belonged to it there.
I see.
And I learned that. Then when that was done, they put it over here in this other one. And then over here, they do something else.
Mm-hmm.
And up here, they do something else. And gradually, till it was up to the end where it was all complete.
Mm-hmm. And so from the very beginning, they showed you how to rivet and buck both?
Yeah, a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But later, as I got going, I learned to rivet and buck. And then I was riveting and bucking all the whole thing afterwards. Because they after I learned this operation,
mm-hmm.
then they would change me
and
put me to the next to learn that other operation. And I would be there sometime, and then they put me. Finally, I learned the whole thing.
Yeah, how long did that take?
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea. It probably didn't take too long.
Say, a couple months? Or?
No, more than that, because I was in each area for a while.
Uh-huh. And each time you
Anyway,
moved?
By the end of the year, I was up front.
Ah, I see. Okay. Now, was the whole area that worked on the elevators considered one department with one lead?
Mm-hmm.
And do you recall who your lead was and what, I assume it was a man.
Yeah.
What he was like?
They didn't call them leads at that time. They called them, what the heck did they call them? I think his name was Stalker, his last name.
And how many of you were under the one?
I don't remember how many there were. There were quite a few.
In your section of the elevator that you worked on, would there be other people working very close to you?
Yeah, they have say that I'm here, and the next elevator would be right there. There'd be people working there, and then so many feet in between.
Uh-huh, so maybe 10 feet or so in between.
Maybe, and then the other one and like that.
And what were the other workers? And were they? I'm wondering in terms of their age and if how many were men and how many were women.
Well, there was a mixture,
mm-hmm.
a mixture of women and whites and blacks and old and young, everything.
Mm-hmm. And were there many Mexican workers?
In that area, I don't think there were too many.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there were too many. Maybe 3 or 4 or so. I don't remember. I do remember that I had one girl that I worked with. She was a Mexican girl. But I don't remember whether there were more. And there was Italians, and there were a lot of blacks and
mm-hmm.
whites, you know, a mixture.
And what was the relationship like among all the workers in the department, say?
Well, good. We all spoke to each other.
Would you spend time with each other on breaks and at lunchtime?
Oh, yeah, sometimes, you know, sit wherever they were, you know. They had, most of them smoked, so they had smoking areas. They would go out of there in the aisle. They had aisles, and they sit there on the floor.
Mm.
They didn't have no places like now. Now everything is so different. And they would sit on the floor and smoke. The guys would do the same thing. But I didn't smoke or anything, so I didn't.
Now, this would be on their breaks then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did you go about befriending some of the other workers, since you were such an isolated kind of person? Was that difficult?
No, not too much. See, if they talk to me, I can start, you know. I don't have a problem getting close to people if they want to get close to me.
Mm-hmm.
But if I see that they don't want to, I keep away from them. Like at work, I had a lot of friends. But like I say, I would get close to them. If they wanted me, okay. If they didn't want me, I leave them alone. That's it, huh?
Who would you spend time with in that very first year, say, as you were moving up from one place to another in the elevators? Who would you spend time with on your
breaks? I'd say that this girl, this Mexican girl that was there, that afterwards, you know, we were working together, I think that I spent quite a bit of time with her.
Mm. And how old was she?
She was a young girl. She was, I imagine, in her late 20s, I guess. I was older than her.
Mm-hmm. Did she have a family?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember we went to visit her family one time. She lived up in Watts area, in Bandini Street mm-hmm. or something. She lived up there. Irene Herrera was her name. And she had never been married. So I don't know. After that, I don't know what happened, whether she got married or what. I never saw her again.
Mm-hmm. And when you first started, before your son got sick, say,
mm-hmm.
What was your thought after you got more comfortable and got used to it, in terms of, was this something that you thought you wanted to continue? Or did you see this as something just during the war years?
Well, I don't know. I just, I didn't think that I would go back to work at Lockheed. When I got out of there, I didn't think that I would ever go back.
But when you first began, did you think about this being something that you wanted to stick with? Before you actually quit?
I never give it a thought. Never thought, you know, this is it, I'm going to stay. Mm-hmm.
How did it feel to you to be earning your own money?
Felt good. And besides, you know, it was my own money. I could do whatever I want with it, because my husband, he never stopped, you know, whatever he was giving to the house, whatever he was paying, he kept on paying it.
And what sorts of things would you do with that?
Well, I used to buy clothes for the kids,
mm-hmm.
buy little things that they needed, you know. That's what I used to do.
How did you handle it? Did you keep it separate from the money that he brought in?
Yeah.
And did you have an account or what?
I had a bank account, mm-hmm. and I had a little savings at home
mm-hmm.
where I could get a hold of the money right away if I needed it.
He never asked about it, or?
He knew how much I made. Mm-hmm. I showed him. I used to show him, and he knew. But If there was something that was had to be paid or something, and I had the money and he didn't have it, well, I used some of my money too.
Mm-hmm.
But he never said, well, you have to pay because you were earning money. He always took care of the house and my money. I did what I wanted.
Now tell me, how long did it take for you to learn that very first operation and to move up to the next? Do you remember?
Maybe a couple of months or mm-hmm. Maybe they kept me there a couple of months, probably.
And then what was the next step in the operation?
I don't remember what else they did, the next operation. I know that they put the skins on them and drill out. and then the next would be riveting. I don't exactly remember.
Yeah, so you learned to drill then.
Yeah.
And then using the gun most of the time.
And no, the drilling was separate. You know, you drill the skins and you click on them and everything else. And then the other
and
operation
the
would be just riveting.
And the one, or the partners would rivet and buck the entire elevator section at that point.
She would be facing me. We had the elevator here.
Mm-hmm.
She was either riveting, if we were riveting that skin, I'd be bucking. And then if this skin had to be riveted, I'd give her the gun and I'd be, I'd give her the bucking bar and I'd start shooting up here.
Mm-hmm. So you would trade off on bucking and riveting?
Yeah, we'd go one side and then I hand her the gun or the bucking bar, whatever, and then come back. See, it's riveted.
Which of the two operations did you prefer?
Well, I had a lot of fun riveting, and I thought that was her and I. We used to have a lot of fun. We used to tell her they would want maybe 6 or 5 elevators a day or so, you know. And I say, let's get with it. And we worked pretty hard all day till about 2 o'clock. And then at 2 o'clock, we would slack down, you know. We could kind of take it easy a little bit to get the, but we try to get the main portion of what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier, so that then by that other hour, you know, we would be done.
Was there, in effect, a minimum number that you were supposed to do in a day?
Yes. Yes, they would say, we need 5 or we need 6, so elevators today, because they were building, those airplanes, they were building 6, 7, 8 a day.
Mm-hmm.
And they were shipping them out fast, so. But it was a lot of fun, you know. At that time, like I say, I was young, and It was a lot of fun.
Now, you had a stand then for this operation, it
yes.
sounds like, doesn't it? Work
yes.
Did you have anything to stand on?
They had pads, you know, rubber pads on the floor, because there was, I think it were wood floors up there. I remember. I don't remember very well. But they had these runners, you know, rubber.
Yeah, well, how did that seem, standing all day?
Well, it was tiresome. I'd come home, you know, pretty tired, and then afterwards, I started getting rides, but at the beginning, I was riding the streetcar. And when I didn't get a seat, that I had to stand up, it was a little bit rough.
Now, when you come home, would your mother have dinner ready, or did you then have to make dinner?
At that time, I think they'd have dinner ready,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we talked about standing. But what about things like the lighting and the ventilation? What were those like in that department?
They were pretty good. They had the building had a lot of windows.
Mm-hmm.
They had them all open. And well, I didn't. I don't remember having too much trouble with the heat or anything up there. So they must have had it pretty. I've had more problems up here in Burbank,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the heating and all that, but ventilation. But up there, I don't remember having too much.
And what about the noise from all the riveting guns? How did that affect?
Well, we used to wear earplugs. We used to have to wear earplugs.
Did that help?
It helps if you use them. But, but sometimes we didn't use them. Like this last time that I worked, I used them whenever it was convenient. You know, if I was doing a lot of riveting, I would use them. But otherwise, it would be doing riveting up there, but I wasn't wearing them.
Hmm.
So,
and how about goggles? Do you have to use any sort of goggles?
Yeah, you. I got safety glasses for myself.
Well, you were wearing glasses at the time.
Well, I wasn't, but I had to have some safety glasses to use when I was drilling and all that.
Mm.
And then I started having trouble with my to read my scale and all that I couldn't see it very well, or else I would put on the safety glasses on, and I forget to take them off, and I leave them on all day. You see, that's how I started messing up my eyesight. So there, eventually, I had to wear glasses permanently.
Mm-hmm.
I wore them for a while. I was wearing them just temporarily, you
mm-hmm.
know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But then, afterwards, when I was driving at night, I had to use them. So.
Now, what would you do at lunchtime during this period that you were still working on the elevators? What? You had about a 30-minute lunch break? And where would you take your
Would run down some of the girls. We would get the elevator. And there was, in the next corner, there was a drugstore that served lunches. And I would go and order my lunch there, and I would eat it. But I was very thin, and I never gained weight. And I would buy mashed potatoes and stuff like that, salad and all. And the other girls would say, "Gee, my God, where are you going to put all that? You must have take one," because it didn't affect me. I had to get to a certain age to start raising my weight. So.
And who would you usually go to this special
one? Oh, with the girls, you know, they maybe. There was a lady, a white lady, that she used to go, and Irene would go, and maybe two or three of us would go.
What kinds of things would you talk about with each other?
Oh, maybe I talk about my kids, or maybe they say something about their families or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That's what
it was mainly about family.
Yeah.
Sort of
mm-hmm.
Were
yeah.
there any? I mean, there were a lot of young women during the war for whom it was a big kind of party period.
Well, those young ones, you know, I didn't be associated with the younger ones, I guess. I don't know.
Now, what about, you told me the story about the man who was supposed to be training you, who
yeah.
made that remark.
Yeah.
What about the reactions of other men? You said the men weren't really too pleased about the women working there.
Well, they got used to it later. They got used to it because, it was one thing that it was unavoidable. They had to. They were leaving. Somebody had to do the job. So
were there others who would make comments like he did?
No, I never had any problem with any other man but that one.
Mm-hmm.
I think that man must have had something, some problem, you know, in his mind. He must have had some kind of problem or something, you know, that maybe that's why he was like that mm-hmm. with me. That's the only thing I can think of.
How about things like what today I guess we call sexual harassment, but men forcing themselves on you or flirting or making passes? Would any of that go on?
Well, there were a lot of guys that you talk, you know, and but they didn't mean nothing. Didn't you know you didn't take them serious? We laugh about everything, you know, and stuff like that.
Well, among the younger women, was there much dating going on with the other men who were working there, do you think?
Well, yeah, I think there was a lot of it.
And very often you hear talk about a lot of playing around.
Mm-hmm, there was a lot of it.
Now, is that one of the problems that you had with your husband ever? Did that come up as an issue?
No.
You're concerned about your working around all these other men?
No. Mm-mm. No, I think that what was the problem with him was that he just didn't want me to get on my own or something like that. I think that was the only thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing else.
Did you start feeling differently once you started working?
No.
I mean, in terms of here, you've been more isolated and protected.
Well, I started feeling a little more independent. Just a little, not too much,
mm-hmm.
because I was still not on my own, that I could do this and do that, and I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't, you know, I didn't till after,
mm-hmm.
and then I really got independent.
Now, so all this time, you still weren't driving?
No.
But you said that you started riding with some other people.
Ride with people, yeah. That they would give us rides, you know. They'd have signs in them, the offices or mm-hmm. the bulletin board, and they say they would give us rides.
Now, from Pasadena, there wasn't a Lockheed bus that went down to the plant?
No. The only thing that I could get to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there was any bus from there to Burbank. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But to Los Angeles, there was only a streetcar, a red streetcar.
Mm-hmm. And how about, did you ever do anything with the other people that you worked with outside of work hours?
No.
So you would basically, right after work, come home.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember, did you have any problems at all during this period with work in terms of wanting to change jobs or any kind of problems that you would present to, say, someone?
No.
Did you have any contact with, there were women counselors
no.
there, you know,
no.
Were you aware of any other kind of services that Lockheed offered? You said that you signed up for everything.
No, I wasn't aware very much. There was everything there, I know. Like afterwards, you know, I realized that I could have gone on a leave of absence instead. When I panicked about my boy, I could have gone on a leave of absence. But at that time, I wasn't too familiar with all that, so I just panicked and went and quit.
Oh.
Whereas I could have gotten maybe a month, maybe 2 months leave of absence.
So you didn't know, for instance, that there was a woman counselor that you could have talked to and who might have given you some advice about it?
I didn't know for sure anything like that, you know.
Uh-huh. And your lead person didn't assist you in any way there?
No, he didn't say nothing.
Now, as you moved up, by the time you got to the end of the operation, what were you doing at the very end of it?
At the end, there was a boy there, a young man, working there, and him and I used to put it through inspection. And first we used to put a flap with a hinge and a wire, and put that flap so that it wouldn't ride, and we have to get it just right, so it just flapped right over. And then we would put it through inspection, check, see what there's anything wrong with it or something that might not have gone through that. So we would do that.
Now, were you considered an inspector then at that point? Were you classified as an
inspector? No. I wasn't. We would put it through inspection, and the inspector would come and check it.
Oh, and that would be the end of that part then,
yeah.
In other words.
And then they'd stamp it, and there it went.
And was there anything different that you did then in the operations you moved on? You said you moved up. You learned one thing, and then the next thing, and then the next thing.
Well,
how did the operation change in terms of your own work?
Well, like I said, when I began, I just began putting little platelets and stuff like that. Then afterwards, I learned how to drill the skins and boom and everything else. Then I learned how to rivet. And then there was a nose, that they call it nose. There was a round deal like that that went all up on top of the elevator so that it would fit, that other part would fit right on it, the aileron that was being built on another floor. So I learned how to put that too. And just went like that.
And then the very last step was the flap.
The flap and putting it through inspection.
And when you got to the last step, would you still do 5 or 6 a day, or would that be?
Oh yeah. Everybody, everybody, each operation there had to do as many as they were said to be done on the day.
Now, what would happen if, for instance, you got behind, or if any of the operations got behind? Would they ask you to spend overtime that day in order to
No, they I never worked overtime, but I did work on Saturdays and Sundays sometimes. Well, I don't know if we were ever behind or anything, because it seemed like everything went pretty good.
And each, as you moved up in the steps of the operation, would you get reclassified or get pay changes?
No.
It was all considered
the same.
What was your classification? Assembler?
I guess just an assembler.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember that time. Now the classifications and everything is everything different. Well, at that time, there wasn't a strong union. So you see, it didn't quite matter.
Mm.
You see, because now the union is watching every step of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And before, it wasn't that, so it really...
Did you get pay increases?
No, I don't think I did. Well, yeah, I did. Up to when I quit, I was making $1.05. That was tops.
So you went from 65
to $1.05. That was tops pay.
But those were automatic increases? Those weren't reclassifications?
No.